Afternoon and good evening. We have a special guest coming from the UK today. It's going to be a great interview. I have spoken to her a little bit, and I usually don't speak to a guest because I like to be surprised as I interview her, but she seems like she's pretty nice. Her name is Jane Ridsden, and I probably screwed up her last name, but she'll correct me. But Jane, you know, this is her story. And she's going to talk about her first collection of short crime stories that was published in 2019. And her first collection of short crime stories was, like I said, was published in 2019. And with stories in genres of crime, which covers the length people go to in order to inherit from a will, to a serial killer working for HM UK government, and a Facebook stalker and a rapist. She covers it all. She brings it. This interview will be chilling. That's because it's probably really cold in the UK. Nah, it'll be chilling. I think it's chilling when you talk about crime, rapists, stalkers. She was just in the studio. I hope she's not having a hard time coming in the studio because she just left. I hope she comes back. So we're going to go over that, and Jane brings the beauty. Now it's time for her to face the beast, which is me. Let's sell some books, and let's have a great time. And I think she just left the studio, and this is one of the glitches that we have, especially when you're calling from the UK. Until she gets back, let's talk a little bit about Jane. Following a career in the international music business, she decided to write full-time. Successfully published novels with headline accent, Only One Woman, with Christina Jones, set in the UK music scene of 1968, and many short stories and anthologies and articles in print, online, and magazines. Undercover short crime shorts have critical acclaim from a former homicide detective and is a gripping edge of the Seek collection, with more twists and turns than Spaghetti Junction. I also feature on regular radio internet shows. He's married to a musician, managed recording artists, songwriters, record producers, and placed music in TV movie soundtracks. She worked at the Foreign and Commonwealth Office at the height of the Cold War. Lots of experience in music around the world. I'm thinking she's in, and she was, and she's not. Sometimes we have problems with Facebook. Oh, and problems with Blog Talk when we have a guest that's in the UK. So I'm crossing my fingers she's coming back into the studio. I should have caught her like that when she came in. this is kind of the problems would happen with live radio. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to stall a little bit and see if she can get right back in the studio. And we will have that interview with Jane Risden, and I got a feeling it will happen. In the meantime, let's get some news going on right now because we are live and I have to stall. All right, here we go. I did save some articles to, again, welcome to the show, everybody. It's December 20th. We got 4 days till Christmas, and I got to start shopping. Until Jane gets in, I want to read a poem. Now, oh, Jane's here. Let me see if I can get her really quickly. Jane?
Hi. Hello.
Good morning.
How are you?
Hello, lovely one. Top of the morning to you, dear.
Top of the morning to you, too.
Well, Jane, I'm glad you came to the studio. What time is it where you are?
It's about 5:05 in the afternoon.
Oh, okay, good. So it's not in the morning.
Yeah.
Well, Jane,
it's not in the morning.
Well, welcome. Yeah, because I worry about the time. Jane, you and I talked a couple of times on Facebook. You seem like a lovely woman, and I would have tea and crumpets with you on a Sunday afternoon.
Oh my God, you could do if you wanted.
Yeah.
Or you could have a JD and Coke and a packet of peanuts.
See, now that's better. I like it.
That is.
I like it. I know. Well, Jane, tell me a little bit about you. You've been on other internet radio shows. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, I have. Quite a few.
Wow. Quite a few.
Did you want to know which one?
Sure.
Right. There's a radio station in the UK called Chat and Spin Radio, and that's based up in a place called Tyne and Wear, which is the north of England, but it broadcasts globally, really. But it's a local community station, which is non-for-profit. So they do a lot of, charity stuff as well as local musicians, authors, that sort of thing. And in the last year, they've gone global. So they've got listeners in Australia and Canada and America, all over. That's one. And I do a regular spot on there every week talking about writing. And then I've been on the authorsshow.com, which is an American show, which again goes out globally just for authors, and I have a spot on there every 2 weeks, I think it is, and chat about books and things like that. So I'm quite used to it, and I used to go on the radio when I was managing bands, so I'm quite used to talking to someone that's not there.
Well, that's great, because you sound good and you sound relaxed. We're going to get right into it. So when did you start writing, Jane?
Well, I started when I was a little girl. I used to scribble mm-hmm. stories on bits of paper because, I sort of had a creative side of me. One half of me wanted to be a prima ballerina. Mm-hmm. Another part of me wanted to be Doris Day in the films, and I also wanted mm-hmm. to sing. So I think that sort of creative side of me was around. And I did a lot of literature things at school and got prizes and what have you. But I married a musician and we traveled so much that I never actually had mm-hmm. time to sit down and write anything. And then we went into the management of bands and record producers, that sort of thing. And again, you're always doing something for someone else. You're never doing anything for yourself. And about 2011, we decided that we would put a halt to things and have a life. And so I thought, well, I'll start writing. So we were moving house, and you know what it's like when you get boxes of stuff everywhere. And I was going through some of them and came across some photographs and old tour schedules from the 1960s and things like that. And before you knew it, I had a story in my head. And that was a book that came out last year called Only One Woman, which I co-wrote with an author called Christina Jones. And that's on Headline Accent Press. And that was about the 1960s music scene. And I'd also been writing a book called Miss Birdsong Investigates, which was about a former MI5 officer who had got booted out of the service when something went wrong. And she was trying to get herself back into the service, so she started investigating local crimes. And that's sort of set in the countryside, but it's quite gritty. And then I was published, as I said, with only one woman in 2014. And I've done lots of things since then, loads of stories in anthologies. And the latest is this book I've put out myself with Placid Publishing, Undercover Crime Shorts. And that's a collection of short crime stories, which you can read, you know, on the journey to work or sort of during your lunch break or just before you nod off to sleep at night, if you don't mind having nightmares, that is. So I've been writing for a long time, and I write for magazines, print magazines and online magazines, that sort of thing.
Well, you sound busy. You do have a publisher, am I correct? Would you like to give a shout out to your publisher?
I will do. I've actually got two, because I'm one of those weird people that's traditionally published. I'm published by Headline Accent, which is part of the Hatchet Group. And they take my non-crime material. And my crime material is published by a New Zealand publishing company called Placed Publishing House. So I'm sort of like a split in half. You know, I'm a psychopath. I've got my crime writing side and I've got my other side. So, you know, it depends which hat I wear.
Well, you know what? You seem like you have some talent. You're creative. Why crime stories, Jane? What interests you in crime stories?
Oh, God, where to begin? I read a lot of crime. I like thrillers, mysteries, espionage, that sort of thing. I love puzzles. I don't do crosswords, funnily enough, but I do like puzzles. And I think it's trying to get into the nitty-gritty of people, you know, the motives behind criminality. Why would somebody murder someone when perhaps, you know, you could get divorced or you could sort of, you know, forge a will? I mean, whatever. But I think it's the personality that, you know, anybody can commit a murder. I've come to that conclusion.
Right.
And when I was thinking about writing crime, I thought, well, I don't really know anything about crime, so except what I've read. And I thought I should write what I'd like to read. And so that's what I do. I write what I like to read, and if other people like it as well, that's great. But I'm a great fan of Kathy Reichs. I think she's brilliant. And a lot of her books, obviously, they're based with a medical examiner because that's what she is in real life. Mm-hmm. And she inspired me to take some forensic science courses and criminal justice courses with universities. So I did those online and learned all about, you know, how to identify bones when you find them in a shallow grave when there's no identifying factors there except the bones, right through to the actual court case where somebody is prosecuted. And in that process, you go through all the investigation with the police and everything, and the forensic pathologist, all of that investigation. And then when you get to the actual courtroom, how evidence is presented, how witnesses are examined. And that really interested me. And also, the thing that I found really quite disturbing was the number of miscarriages of justice. And we did investigate a couple of those cases. There was a TV presenter who was murdered in, I think, 1998 in the UK called Jill Dando. And the police went after this guy. I can't remember his surname, something George. But he was prosecuted for the murder and went away for about 18 years originally on the evidence of a tiny, tiny speck of gunpowder residue in a trouser pocket. And that was the only evidence they had, apart from the fact that he used to walk past her gate every day and he liked women. So he did used to sort of like make noises and things at women. It was something not quite right with him.
Right.
But when he walked past her gate, the forensic people did a search of all the area around her home and found minute fibers from trousers. And they traced the trousers to, I think it was Marks and Spencer's, which is a big shop. And, of course, you can imagine the number of people that walk past a gate in London every single day. So they narrowed this down to this fibre. And then because he'd been seen in the area, they pounced on him. And, of course, when they went through his pockets, they found this gunshot residue, which was quite interesting because he was convicted on that and sent to prison. But you have something in America called the Innocent Project. Do you know about that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. We had a couple of people on the show. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know how important that is then. Those three guys recently were released, weren't they, in America after, was it 36 years, I think? Yeah, well, the Innocent Project took up his case in England and investigated it and discovered that you and I could be traveling on the underground, the tube, the railway, the bus, anywhere. We could sit in a restaurant and touch the table or touch something that somebody else touched and pick up gunshot residue on our hands
Interesting.
and not having
Interesting.
Ever been near a gun. So that was
Interesting.
why, yeah, it is. So you and I could be walking around with gunpowder on our hands and not know it. And somebody could decide to do a test on us because there'd been a shooting or something. And if we'd been, near someone who had handled a gun, you and I could be up for a crime we never even knew existed, let alone committed. So that
You know,
inspired me.
that is very
Sorry?
interesting. And the same thing with money. There's a
Yeah.
study that most of the money that we handle are through the drug trade, and you have traces of cocaine or whatever on
Yeah.
our money, on our hands. And if people don't think
Yes. Well,
about that.
no. I'll tell you an example of that as well. Is
Sure.
people that travel through Dubai Airport. They have a system in Dubai that you walk across something when you come through immigration, and they test your shoes. And people have been arrested in Dubai for having drugs on the bottom of their shoes when they've never even been anywhere near a drug. So you
Interesting.
think about that. It's scary, isn't
Yeah.
it?
Very.
Yeah.
Then that, what's even scarier? Let's say, hypothetically, you and I were dating.
Yeah.
Now, you love crime stories, so you're probably hanging around with psychologically challenged people. You're having tea because you talk about crime stories. I'm there as an
Yeah.
innocent guy. You and I, and then
Yeah.
all of a sudden, I give you a little kiss, a little mwah, mwah, mwah.
Yeah.
Then you get assaulted, and my DNA could be on your lips. How's
It could
that?
be. It could
Wow.
be. I'd have to go around
It's
kissing
a.
paper, wouldn't I, so they could test it.
I will never do that again. I didn't know that. Very
But
good.
it's very, very difficult. I mean, we've got all this technology now that we can rely upon. But imagine 30,
Right.
40, 50 years ago, you haven't got a hope in hell, have you? To prove your
No.
innocence. But yes, I mean, unless there's video evidence, that you were in a certain place at a certain time, and even
Right.
that doesn't always stand up. Yeah, you could find yourself in trouble if somebody was
That is.
maliciously accusing you, that is.
Sure. It's really, the technology is just wonderful. Let me ask you a question, Jane.
Yeah.
Who was Jack the Ripper? Who was Jack the Ripper?
I haven't got a clue. I've seen so many programs about Jack the Ripper. I even watched one with Patricia Cornwell, who spent all her own money investigating it, the author. And she came up with some American painter, I think she thought was the Jack the Ripper.
Really?
But yeah, I can't remember his name. But there are so many theories, and so many people think they've solved it. I honestly don't know. It was a nasty
Really?
piece of work, whoever he was.
It was, but some people are linking it, and they're holding on to the culture or the legend that it was somebody from the Queen. It was somebody from the royal family.
Yeah, I
They're
think that
holding.
one was knocked on the head a long time ago, actually.
I don't know. Have you seen Prince Charles lately? I mean, look at that guy. I don't know. He looks.
You want to tread
He.
carefully. I like the royal family.
I know, he looks suspicious. Oh, we're going to bring him
Off
in. I know, off with his head. Let there be cake. Wow.
Exactly. Yeah.
You seem like a lovely lady, and you get into crime. Do you believe that we're born murder, that we have the capability of murdering people? Everybody in the world, are we, do you think everybody in this world has the capability of murder?
I actually do believe that, and it's quite interesting because I grew up in a village not far from a place called Broadmoor. Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't.
It used to be, Right. It was built in the Victorian times to house the criminally insane. It was a hospital asylum. And they had all sorts of people in there. They had, I don't know if you've heard of Myra Hindley and Ian Brady, the Moors killers. They died in there eventually. But we have all of the worst murderers there, and usually the ones that are found criminally insane. And it's now a hospital.
Right.
But I grew up near there. And so, you know, there were escapes and things like that. It was quite exciting. I sort of spent my life traveling around the world with the army with my parents. But when I was first young and I went to school there, there was this establishment which is still there, and now it holds mainly really bad murderers and terrorists. You know, the ones that cut people's head off in the street, those sorts.
Right.
The guy who was the top doctor there, shall we say, I can't remember his title, came to give a talk at the local library to a bunch of middle-aged women and old people about his work at Broadmoor. And they were asking him, you know, were people born bad? And he said, yes, yes. And they were absolutely shocked and horrified. And they said, well, who's bad and who's good? And he said, well, you don't know, because basically we're all the same. And then one trigger would make you kill someone, but it wouldn't make me kill someone. Something would set you off on a rampage of murder that wouldn't set someone else off. But there is something within us, and people are actually had that badness in them, when they're born. And it's just that some people's triggers don't go off and other people's triggers do. So that's a scary thought, isn't it?
It is. It is a scary thought. And when the people at the end of their rope and they have that much anger and they want to hurt someone, I guess you can. Mm. How long have you been married, Jane?
I've been married. Are you prepared for this?
I'm prepared.
50 years.
Oh, you're still on your honeymoon.
To the same
Very
person.
Nice. Wow.
I know. My trigger hasn't gone off yet.
It hasn't gone yet. Maybe you got a, you know, slow trigger. You know, just wait another 10 years and see what happens. Now, you mentioned...
I don't want to scare him.
Really. Well, I don't know. You're writing these little crime stories. Did you ever think about putting him in one of your books and just mutilate him? You know, 50 years, he must have pissed you off once in a while. You had it. Did you take him apart?
Big time.
He is sort of
disguised in the book I mentioned to you about the music industry in the 1960s. He does appear in there, sort of. But he doesn't get killed. There are no dead bodies. You know, it's just a life on the road with a band.
Wow.
Which is quite, you know, but no, I've never put him in a murder story.
You never did.
You give me ideas now.
Well, I will. And that's what I do. But, you know, Jane, you know, I've been interviewing writers and authors for 10 years, and there's one thing they have in common. When you go out, it could be a restaurant, and you see a kind of a waiter with a strange look, you know, maybe big ears or eyes are crossed, just something different about them. Do you look at people and say, you know, that's it? I'm going to base a story on this guy. I mean, are you constantly thinking of things that you see around you that could be possibly a book or a story?
Oh, I'm dreadful. I can stand in a line of people and have a look at someone and something they do or say, or that aura that some people have, and I think, oh. You could do this or you could do that. A name even. You know, sometimes you hear a name on the news or read it in a paper or something.
Sure.
And I immediately get a vision of that person. And then the whole story sort of comes into my head.
That is great. Did you ever think about becoming a film producer or work on one of these series, you know, like Murder, She Wrote or something, and put your name in it to see if you can get on a show as a writer?
No, I haven't. But funnily enough, when I lived in America, I lived in Hollywood. I was working with musicians and recording artists and record producers, that sort of thing, making records. But we also did a lot of television series like Baywatch back in the 90s. And so I did come into contact with lots of people, and I have actually placed manuscripts for other people with film companies and television companies. But I would love to do it. I mean, there, you know, it's, but it's so hard. It's like a closed shop, really, to get in there. But I would, because I have ideas for movies. You know, I do.
Well, let me give you some. Well, nowadays, it was hard back then. I lived in Hollywood, too. It was hard back then. It's like who you know or who you slept with.
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes.
That's right. Well, I'm not sleeping with anyone, so I, it was who
well,
I knew.
You know, that's who you knew.
I mean,
that's who you knew.
I have to tell you, most of them were old, so I wasn't interested.
But nowadays it's easier for you. But nowadays it's easier for you. I'm going to give you a tip. All you have to do, see, nowadays, you got so many TVs fading out, Jane. In about five years, there'll be no more TV. Everybody's going streaming. Everybody's going streaming.
Yeah.
And Disney right now, I'll tell you, Disney right now, with their streaming service, they're looking for people like you. You can Hulu, Disney, we can go on and on and on. Netflix.
Yeah.
They have opened up a portal that they need. They're so hungry for talent and stories that they have opened up a portal now that you can reach out to them and they would take you on.
Right. I shall have to do that.
Just a little tidbit. Now, let's talk about your crime stories. So when I pick up the book, the name of the book is called, Short Crime Stories or?
Undercover Crime Shorts. Undercover Crime Shorts. Yeah.
And how many little short stories am I going to read when I pick up your book?
There are seven in there. I've got about 100 to go, and I do have lots of them in other anthologies, actually, so you can read my, my crime stories all over the show, but there are seven. Each one of them, you can sort of read, I would imagine, in about a half hour or so, maybe a bit longer, it depends how fast you read. Each one is a complete story. The last story is an excerpt from the novel I told you about called Miss Birdsong Investigates, which is about the MI5 lady. And so, you know, you can. But it's funny because people say to me, oh, they picked it up to read, you know, a story at a time and then ended up reading the whole book in one go.
Wow.
I can't put it down. So, yeah, I'm pleased about that. And
you
also, I have
great.
A lot of detectives. Yeah, a lot of detectives that have become writers have become friends of mine because I can pick their brains every now and again about things. Mm-hmm. I don't write police procedure. I don't do that. But I write quite gritty stories, but I don't have too much visual violence, if you see what I mean. It's not there. It's suggested. But I get a lot of information from them, and they've read it, and they've told me it's very accurate and very, very sort of real. You know, so I'm happy with that. People like it, I think. I hope.
Well, they do, because you came out with Only One Woman. That came out in 2017.
Well, 2018 was the paperback. Yeah.
Oh, the paperback. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it's a children's book, Jane. Now.
No.
Do you kill kids? Do you kill kids in that book? I mean, those little bastards. They deserve.
No. There are children in it. There are children in it because it's based on a two girls who are in love with the same guitarist, and the two girls don't know about each other. Well, one knows about the other, but the younger one doesn't. And the youngest person in the story, called Renza, is the eldest of six children, and she has a bit of a Cinderella life at home. And she meets this guitarist, and they fall in love, and then she has to go overseas. And he is bereft, but then he finds solace in the arms of Stella. And Stella knows about Renza, but Renza doesn't know about Stella. And it's how does that, you know, play out? And also you've got things like the Cold War comes into it because Renza goes to Germany and lives in a place which was flooded in the Second World War by the Dam Busters. And you've got the moon landings, you know, when they all go off and watch that together. There's lots of music in it because there are real life stars that appear in the book. And so it's sort of like a story which is really, I mean, you could go to the venues that this band played at all over Europe and the Mediterranean and the UK. And some of those venues are still there. And it's actually how they recorded, how they looked for songs, how they met famous people, what they ate, what they drank, what they wore, what they watched, what they listened to. It's all of that.
Wow.
And then I was very lucky because the book is called Only One Woman, and it's named mm-hmm. after a song that was written by the Bee Gees for a mm-hmm. duo called The Marbles. Back in 1968, they had a hit with it. Right, and I thought, oh, that's such a great title. And the story is about the confusion as to whether this guy is going to pick this one or this one, you know, which woman was he going to end up with. And I asked the singer from the Marbles, a guy called Graham Bonney, if he would write the foreword. And Graham Bonney, if you like bands like Rainbow and Alcatraz and Michael Schenker and, I don't know, there's dozens of, they're heavy rock bands, right? He's very well known. And he's been inducted into the Bettel Hall of Fame in January in Arizona, I think, or somewhere. I asked him if he would write the foreword, and he did. And he wrote about how the Bee Gees wrote for him and you know, the process of the songwriting, how that launched his career, and how when he read Only One Woman, it was a completely accurate depiction of the 1968-69 music scene in England. And he loved it. So we were very lucky that he would do that for us.
Wow. Well, tell me about, and I think this is your book, Cons, Dames, and G-Men.
Yeah. it's not all my book. It's actually an anthology. And I wrote, and I wrote a story for that set in the 1939 Hollywood. And it's a story about a starlet who we don't know if she's murdered or she's committed suicide on the set of a big movie that's taking place. And there are mafia connections and all sorts of things like that. And the leading man decides to investigate her murder or her suicide, you know. And, of course, the studio's trying to cover it up because studios used to be very, very controlling back then. I'm sure you know that. And so it takes you through 1939 Hollywood and the movie, the studio system. And I won't give you the ending, but it's a very, very surprising ending. But that's a collection of other stories by the writers as well.
You know, it's a great cover, too. I just love the cover. I'm looking at it right now. It got four. It's amazing cover. It has 4.5 out of 5 stars.
Yeah.
It's almost perfect. So how do you write an anthology? Who gives the idea? Does your publisher say, look, we're gonna do a shorts of a lot of crime stories. Do you have an idea we could put it into an anthology with other writers? How does that work?
Yeah, well, my publisher put out 2 anthologies. I think it was in 2014. I can't remember now. And it was very strange because they put one out in Halloween and one out at Christmas. And I thought, oh, my God, how do you write a Halloween story? I didn't have a clue. And then, you know, it's sort of like, I thought, well, I better not do a crime one, or should I? And then I thought, you know what, I don't care. So I wrote a story which was called The Haunting of Anne Chambers. And it's in an anthology which is called Shiver by the publisher, with a lot of other writers. And, of course, they all did Halloween stories. And I did a story which was based on, it's a time shift story. Do you know what that means? It's like it takes place now, but it also takes place in the past. So you have a character who is also a character in the past. All the characters are coming back from the past. And they're drug smugglers. Yeah, so in the modern day, they're drug smugglers. And in the past, they were pirates. And the story sort of links in and out, in and out, in and out. Anyway, somebody told me that they thought that it was very much like The French Lieutenant's Woman, in that you can get the story to go backwards and forwards in time, and yet you don't notice. You know, the language and the food and the clothes and the atmosphere and everything changes, and then it comes back to the modern day. And they thought, oh, well, she's very clever, she did that. And I thought, oh, I've never done that before. So I quite enjoyed that one. And then the other book, which was called Wishing on a Star, which was meant to be Christmassy, I actually based that on real events. And in 1989, I was recording up in a place called Blackpool, which is the north of England, in a studio which belonged to one of the guys from Whitesnake, but he went on to record with a band called Blue Murder. And he used to be friends with Phil Lynott. Do you know the Thin Lizzy?
No, Frank not familiar. Lizzy?
Oh, he's a black guy who was in a rock band back in the day, and a very famous band. Go and look him up. And he died not long after he'd recorded at the studio. And we were up there during the Christmas period recording. And at the same time, there was a terrible air disaster, the Lockerbie air disaster, where terrorists blew up a plane over Scotland. So that all was a weird atmosphere. And we were in the studio, and we'd brought a friend of ours with us who was a folk singer, but she'd never actually been in a proper recording studio before, so she wanted to come in and see what was happening. But she was also a clairvoyant, right?
Really?
So, this is a true story. We're recording these tracks with a rock band, and you know, you go off and then you come back the next morning and you bring the tracks up on the desk and you have a listen, and everybody says, oh my God, you've got to do that bit again and sing this bit again and what have you. And we put the tracks on, and in the middle of this rock track, there's somebody playing the keyboards. So, well, we never put keyboards on there. So then we thought that, we accused the engineer and the producer of using old tape. No, it's new. Anyway, this went on for several days, and the girl that came with us, who was the clairvoyant, was freaking out. And we said to her, you know, what is the problem? She said, I don't want to be funny or anything, she said, but there's a guy sat in the corner of the room that's nothing to do with the band. I know, because he's not. And she described him, and she said, I don't know who he is, but he sat there. Well, of course, everybody went, oh, that's Phil Lynott. and she said, who's Phil Lynott? Because she only knew folk music, you see. And everybody was like, oh, my God, there's a ghost in the studio. But a guy called Snowy White was the keyboard player, and he'd been putting keyboard tracks down. So we had two ghosts in the studio, one actually appearing on the recording, and one sat in the corner watching. And that is what this book is based on. This story in this book, Wishing on a Star, is based on. And I just fictionalized it, obviously. A bit creepy, don't you think?
It is creepy, and I love it. I love creepy stuff. And by the way, I want to make a comment on your cover on Undercover Crime Shorts. Love your cover. I love the creepy eye looking through the keyhole.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Now,
we got you on the cover.
It looks cool. Now,
thank you.
Again, I've been interviewing a lot of authors. I heard that the cover is like 67% to sell a book. How important is a cover to sell a book?
I think it's really important. I mean, I chose that. I asked somebody to come up with some designs, and I chose it. But when you're with my other publisher, they do the cover. And you have to sort of say, yes, I like it, or no, I don't. But you don't get much, you know, traditional publishers don't give you much choice in anything. You know, these days they're very strict about things. And only one woman's cover was designed by somebody in-house. And I asked if they'd put the little group van up in the corner, because in the story there's a group van, a transit van, called Betty Bedford. And it appeared so much in the story, I thought we're going to stick it on the cover. But that was the only input that we had to that cover. And it's frustrating because, you know, I sometimes look at books and think, oh, God, I wish you'd have a different cover.
But you have to trust your publishing house. But Jane, you know, you're lucky. You have a publisher. There's a lot of people I interview who are independent. You know, they go on Amazon and they create their own books and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Now, were you ever an independent author, or were you just lucky that when you decided to write, you handed over a manuscript and a publisher took you on? How did that work to get you started to get a publisher?
Right. First of all, when I first started writing, and I did do short stories for anthologies, various people would approach me and say, "We're putting together an anthology. Would you like to put a story in it?" And then, of course, you have to be accepted. You know, you can write the story, but if it's rubbish, they're not going to take it. So
right.
I'm quite lucky like that. And I did a lot of online magazines and newsletters writing for things and blogging. That's very important. And when
right.
I went, when, oh dear, let me think, I've got to get the order for this because I actually started several books before only one woman was published. But only one woman I started, I think I said to you about 2011, 2012. And a friend of mine, who's Christina, the actual author with me, she used to be my husband's fan club secretary back when. So we both got this shared love of music and the 60s and what have you, and knowledge. And we'd always wanted to write together, but she writes romance and I don't. I write crime. And we thought, well, that's never going to work. And in 2012, 11, or whenever it was, I started writing Only One Woman, which was going to be a crime story. It was going to be set
right.
in a band in the 60s, and there was going to be this blood and gore and what have you. And halfway through it, I thought, do you know what? It could be a romance and a woman's fiction. I don't like to call it romance because I feel that sort of is not true to the book because it's not a romance as such. But I thought, you know, I'll send it to her and see what she thinks. I'd already been published by Accent, as it was then, before it merged with Headline, for this anthology I told you about with the time shift. And
right.
she read what I'd written for Only One Woman and thought she'd write her bits as well. So she came back to me and said, oh, I've written the rest of the book. So then it went into the publisher, which we shared. I didn't realise she'd been with the Big Five and then suddenly decided to go with this smaller publisher. And so it went in there and they said, right, we'll publish it. So I never, ever actually have ever approached a publisher.
Oh.
So that, I know that's unusual. You know, I wouldn't know
sure.
where to begin.
Now, let me ask you a question because I don't know anything about publishing books. Do you get paid
yeah.
in advance? Do you get paid in advance for a book, or how does that work? How do you get paid? I know you get paid by the sales, but do they,
yeah.
now that you're with a publisher, do you get paid in advance and do you do book tours? Do they book you on tours and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think if, you know, it's like the music industry, isn't it? Years ago, you'd get a massive advance and then you
right.
spend your life trying to pay it off. But I don't know because I never got an advance.
oh.
I think perhaps the only ones that do advance maybe the big publishers who take somebody on who they think, you know, is another J.K. Rowling or something.
Right.
But no, I didn't get an advance. I don't know anybody who did. But you get a royalty off of the sales of the book, which
okay.
you share with the publisher. And they pay you out once or twice a year on that. And it's you know, retrospectively, it's not up front. So most
okay.
writers, you know, earn less than about $20,000 a year.
Right, right. That's not much.
Yeah.
That's not much.
No, it's not. It's scary. It's scary, isn't it?
It is very scary.
That's $10,000. Yeah.
I know. I was going to ask you. I'm going to go to you and I say, you know what? I'm going to be rich. I got a story. I'm going to be a writer.
Mm.
I'm going to be the next Patterson or whoever. And I'm going
yeah.
to. I'm in it for the money.
Uh-huh.
What kind of
no,
advice?
No.
What kind of advice would you give to this moron?
I'd say go and do something else because the reason that most people I know, and I know a lot of authors, they write because they have to and they can't help it. They need to do it. It's like
right.
a musician, isn't it? You've got to do it. But if you do it for the money, unless you can come up with some amazing idea, I don't know what, you're not going to make any money unless you hit it lucky. And again, it's like having a chart hit, isn't it? Out of the box, bang,
right.
you've made it. I don't know any writers who make a lot of money. Even those who tell you that they sell a million on Amazon that are self-published,
right.
Amazon takes such a cut from it. I don't know how much
right.
money they make. I've got no idea. Somebody
mm-hmm.
somewhere always has a slice of it, believe me. But you've got to sell so
yeah.
many books. You know,
you do.
really. I mean, yeah. you look on Amazon. A lot of these books are $1.99, aren't they? Or 99p or 99 cents. Well,
right.
The biggest share of that goes to Amazon.
Right.
So you're left with what? Breadcrumbs.
Right.
And they set the price. You can't say to them, I want to sell my book at X, Y, and Z. They'll give you an option. You can sell it at this, this, or this. But you can't say, mm-hmm. Oh, I'll sell it at $5 or something. They'll say, no, $1.99. So, yeah, they've got you over a barrel, really.
Or they give it away with Amazon, Kindle. Or yeah. And you're sitting there and you're saying, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wow. You know,
yeah.
The problem...
Well,
the,
It's
maddening. You go now. Do you have an alcoholic problem? Do you have a drinking problem? Most writers do. Do you have?
No.
You know, are you on opiates?
I'm,
okay.
No, I'm on tea.
Tea. Oh, I heard about those
tea.
British tea. Wow.
Yeah,
look at that.
I do.
I heard.
When I'm writing, I have endless cups of tea.
Do you really? Wow.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. And if I feel really really wicked. I have a bag of licorice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like licorice?
I love licorice. Wow. You naughty
girl.
That
tastes a bit weird with tea, mind you.
Oh, wow. You know,
no, I don't have a drink problem.
But most of them do. You know, I can imagine.
I know.
You know,
I know.
I'm thinking the old days. We're going back to the old days. That let's say you're going to do a book. I imagine that this scenario, you've been married for 50 years. You don't need him to hang around every day. You know he's coming home. Who cares about him? It's about you. So I can imagine you in a little dark room with a light bulb and just the old days with the typewriter. Deet, 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 deet. Now, when you're in your mood or you're in your zone and you got this book.
Yeah.
By the way, we're talking to Jane. Did I pronounce your name correctly, Risden?
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, we're talking to Jane Risden.
Okay.
We're talking about her. Thank you. Her book is called Undercover Crime Shorts. Now, Jane, you're in your zone.
Yeah.
Do you kick your husband out of the room? Do you tell him to don't bother you for 3 or 4 days? You don't shower. You don't do nothing. I mean, you look like, you know, you look like a cat pooped you out of the butt. You know, because you're writing. You know?
No, I don't mind because... I'm used to working with people around. I mean, you imagine if you were in a recording studio and you've got people sitting there doing what they're doing and you're doing what you're doing and you just get on with it. It's the same, you know, if you're having a TV interview or a radio interview, you're in there doing stuff while they're doing whatever they're doing. People are being interviewed and I'm sat there, arranging things or whatever. It doesn't worry me. And, you know, when I've written before, my husband sat behind me with his guitar plonking away, writing songs, messing around.
Oh, come on. That could
I mean,
be good.
I don't care. And also, I'll say to him, "What? You know, I'll read this out and say, what do you think of this? And it's like, oh, yeah, that's good. I think, well, can I have an opinion? Yeah, that's good. And then I hear, what do you think of this? And I'll hear plonk, 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 plonk. And I thought, oh, okay. So we are a pair of plonkers.
But, you know, you brought up a point. How important is it to have that support system? You have your husband. A lot of independent writers are on their own. They come into the studio, they sell their book. But then they have this conflict, you know, they have this, you'll never make it, you're wasting your time, it's a hobby, you're never gonna, you know, you have that negative vibe, and they still, as you would say, pluck on. How important is it to have a support system, whether it's a best friend or someone to believe in you to finish, get going with one of your books?
I think it's really important. I'll tell you a secret. About 30 odd years ago, I started writing a book. And it was, I can't remember what it was about now, it was something to do with music. I really can't remember. I was staying with a friend in Cornwall in England, which is at the tip. You've heard of Land's End and places like that, maybe. Well, it's right down the west side of England. I was staying with an old school friend, and I had my laptop, and I was, you know, messing around. And she said, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm writing. And she said, oh, really? What are you writing? And I said, well, I'm writing a book. Really? Let's have a look then. And I said, well, I'd rather you didn't. She said, well, come on, don't be silly. Let me read it. And she read it and she looked at me and she said, oh, that doesn't sound like you. And I looked at her and I put the laptop lid down and I went away. And I have to tell you, I did not write again for 30 years.
Wow.
She put me right off. Yeah. And I could kick the hell out of myself for that because she shook me to the core. One word from somebody can actually stop you doing what you want to do. Isn't that awful?
I've seen it. You know, Jane, I have seen it. I have seen it on Facebook. I have seen it on social media. I have seen this one writer. She's really good. She'll get all these accolades. 99%. But that one person who said, you suck, sticks into her craw and messes her up. That one person out of 99. Yeah, that's
it's
very
funny,
interesting.
Because you can. I can read lots and lots of reviews and they're all glowing and lovely. And I think, oh, how wonderful, and completely forget it. And one person says one thing about, you know, it could be just an insignificant little thing. And I'm having a nervous breakdown about that for weeks.
And you don't even know the person. You have no idea who it is. You have no idea. It could be a kid. It could be a...
Because Amazon customer. Who the hell is the Amazon customer? They don't put their name on it, but they slag you off. They slag you off, and you're having a mental breakdown for 6 months afterwards.
Well, you know what I think? Hey, you bought my book. I got paid. So what? No, you know, another thing, and I know you're into crime stories. I've been seeing a lot of books, usually when they first start off. What's going on? We started off with romance book. Okay, romance. We got the Fabio. We got the hair. We got the true romance. Blah, blah, blah. It became erotica now. We're inundated with erotica. Is it just me or has it changed?
I don't know because I never used to read romance. I mean, when I was younger, I read adventure stories, spy stories, espionage, crime stories, you know, Len Dayton, Raymond Chandler, people like that. I've never read romance. In fact, when I wrote Only One Woman, I'd never read a romance. I had no idea how a romance was written. But when people say to me, they write erotica, I start thinking, oh, how do you do that? My imagination is not that good. And I'm old. I forget things.
Well, you don't need imagination. You hung out with musicians. Yeah, you're living romance and you saw all of that.
Yeah, there's a lot I haven't seen. No, there is a lot I haven't seen.
Well, you're lucky. You're lucky. There are some people who saw too much. Yeah. What do you feel about, there's another type of writer, and this is a year or the era of women being sexually harassed, so on and so forth, at jobs and abuse, and I don't know, I'm just, again, I started interviewing authors within 5 years, and there's a theme, a lot of women are coming out writing abuse books about their, you know, their relationships and things like that, and here's my problem, Jane. I'll go to a bookstore. I'll see your book, your cover, crime. I'm in.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I can go to a bookstore and I see a cover of somebody being abused and I want to read, you know, the terrible things that happened to them and the brutal things that happened to them. So tell me, what kind of audience, if you could project, what kind of audience would go right to it and say, you know, I want to read about some woman getting her ass kicked every day, every year, almost murdered.
I don't know. That's to me is a puzzle. Hello?
Right.
Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
I nearly dropped my phone. I don't know because I think I don't know. I'm a bit controversial in this respect because I grew up in an era where if some man tried to manhandle you, you gave him a quick, you know, kick or a slap. Or you called him out in public to make him look a fool. Like, get your hands off me and everybody can hear.
Right.
And that was the end of that. So I am a bit sort of I don't know how people get to a situation where they allow themselves to, or get themselves in a situation where they can't get themselves out of whatever's happening. I don't know. I mean, I'm not talking about real physical nasty abuse. But, you know, I'm listening to these actresses saying, oh, so-and-so touched my knee. I've been assaulted.
Right.
You see, I would just give him such a kick somewhere unpleasant if he did that to me. And he wouldn't do it again.
Right.
If somebody tries to kiss you, you just say, hey, get off. You know, and if they don't, then you belt them one. That's how I, you know, when I was younger. And you just make them look such a fool in front of everybody, like, get your filthy hands off me. And everybody looks around, and he shrinks to about 2 inches high off the floor. That's the end of that. So I don't know why they don't put these people down when they start.
Well, I
know. You know, I just don't.
But look how much... Well, look how much money they get, Jane. I mean, if you get just somebody tries to kiss you, you write a book or whatever, millions of dollars settlement. It's a paycheck, Jane. Millions.
Oh, I know.
You touch a girl.
I can see that.
Touch a girl's bum.
You know, I can see.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know, I used to travel on the tube into London every day. When I was younger, I worked at the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, which is like your State Department sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to travel from one part of London to the other on the Underground every single day. And it was so tightly packed with people. People used to touch you up on there. You couldn't even turn around and thump them. But what you could do is really loudly say, get your hand off of my whatever. And if they didn't, then if you're wearing heels, you just ground your foot into their foot or kick them in the shins. That was the end of that. You know? But I mean, if you called them out really loudly in front of everybody, everybody turned around and looked, and they wish they could just disappear. So that stops that. You know?
I love the UK justice. Exactly. Hey, Jane, we have a real live crime story happening now, Jane. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Yeah.
What's that?
I think you can solve it. I'm going to put you on a case. Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, the real live crime story just lately, 2 days ago, the tapes or the camera, you know, shut off in his prison cell, and they don't have footage of him. It sure did.
Oh, yes, that's
right. It's a mystery.
That's right, and he hanged himself, didn't he?
He sure did.
Did he hang himself?
Well,
very interesting.
That's what they say. Now, here's the story. So after the first time, he was in a cell with somebody, and I guess he got roughed up. So then they put him into another cell. And meanwhile, the people who were supposed to be the correction officers who were supposed to be watching him did not do it. They did not watch him for 8 hours. They didn't even go by his cell for 8 hours. Now this, what do you think?
It stinks. That's what I think.
It does. It does.
It does.
And what about that?
Yeah,
what about that?
Heaven.
Was it Prince? It's a mystery, Jane. It's a mystery.
Yeah.
And what about, was it Prince Andrew who was involved with the Epstein thing? Or one of the royals? What do you think of that? What do you think of that TV show?
I actually watched his interview, and I also watched the interview of the girl that was causing all the fuss over here.
Right.
And I thought that they were making a mountain out of nothing. I mean, she seemed to be quite happy to sleep with people who weren't princes and not get, you know, have any money. But sleeping with a prince apparently was disgusting and awful. And she couldn't stand it, and she needs to have justice. Well, from what I heard of the story on the documentary that they were doing on the television here, there was a girl of 26 who was trafficked on a plane to an island, and she it took her about 3 weeks to decide that she was horrified by what was going on and wanted to come home. So you know, you don't want to go home straight away. You've got to wait like weeks. And this girl that was apparently trafficked to Prince Andrew, the number of times that she had opportunities to say to somebody, you know, excuse me, can you help me? I'm in a situation here I can't get out of. But I actually don't believe it. I mean, I was watching her and I nearly laughed out loud a couple of times, some of the things she was coming out with. And I just thought, you know, somebody's put you up to it and you're going to make a lot of money and you've ruined his life, actually. You know, you don't know 30 years, 40 years in your, you know, ahead of what somebody may or may not do, which is a crime, and you're guilty by association just because you know them. I mean, who doesn't know somebody somewhere who's done something? Is that your fault? Does that reflect upon you? I think it's very flimsy, but it's a lot of mischief making. And of course, people love to make mischief and people love to make money. So I don't know. I wasn't there. And that's the thing of it. You see, none of us were there. How do we know? We don't.
You know,
but
Jane,
I do think
you're
it's
in
malicious,
a
malicious behavior. Sorry?
Oh, I do. I do. I'm on his side, basically. Because I'm looking at, I have to look at it on the outside. First of all, he knew Jeffrey Epstein. He hung with Jeffrey Epstein. So did the presidents and things like that. He was there. He admitted he was at that house. He admitted it. He was there. Okay. Now, you're there because you know why you're there, because it was a party. He knew Jeffrey Epstein. And I don't know, Prince Andrew, is he married? Did he divorce? I'm thinking he divorced.
Sarah Ferguson. He did, yeah.
Oh, I love Sarah. I love Sarah. I really do. I really love Sarah.
Yeah.
I do. I do. So he knew what was going on. We're in Hollywood. You're in Hollywood. You're hanging with musicians. Come on. We know. We know the behind the curtain.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
So this girl was presented to him. Okay. Fine. Now, I don't know what the deal was. I don't know if they said she's 18, she's 19. I don't know what's said, but, you know, hanging around musicians, how many girls come try to get backstage, says I'm 19, and you find out they're 13?
Oh, my God, and their mothers help them as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're quite happy.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I've seen that.
And see, America people, they're so uptight. They have like a pole up their ass. You know the Americans.
Yeah.
Spit on an American. We know. You're in Britain. You're safe. All right. So, you know, he gets presented this girl. Okay, fine. Now what? 20 years later, all of a sudden, 20 years later or whatever, I'm going to tell a story about I was with him, like the boys and shut up. Shut up.
Traumatized.
But see, I think.
Traumatized 20 years later.
Exactly. But here's where I think the Americans get hung up on. They get hung up on, she's just a child. She's underage. She was only a teenager. How dare you, you ugly brute of a man. She's so innocent, and you should know better. This is where we're getting hung up on. And you hung around a lot of musicians. How many of these 16, 17s, come on, let's tell the truth. These 16 and 17-year-olds, they're vicious. They're vicious.
They know what they're doing. A lot of them do.
Yes,
they do. And
yes,
they don't complain because it's a notch on the bedpost. You know, it's this band, it's that singer or whatever. But a lot of them are older. I mean, somebody of 17, 18, 19, they know what they're doing. And the thing is, where are their parents? If these people are 15 or 11 or whatever they are, I don't know. I mean, 11 is disgusting. That's not right. But 15, 16, 17, where are their parents? Are they not wondering where they are, what they're doing, why they're in out late? You know, why don't they tell their parents, I've met up with these people that are a bit creepy and I need some help? Why don't they do that?
Exactly. See, I wonder about that too. And going back to the musician, I don't know what kind of music your husband played and what band he was in, but I guarantee you, I see these boy bands on TV and they pan over the audience and these girls are like, 10 and 11 and 12. And I'm thinking, why is she at a concert? I understand. But I see people at concerts at 13, 14, 15 by themselves with other friends. Why are they there? And why are they trying to get backstage? What is going on here, Jay?
Exactly.
What is going
I know. I don't understand it. I mean, you know, you can compromise yourself very easily if you're not actually tuned up into what's going on. I mean, I can remember being with a rock band in New York and in the hotel, and there was a knock on the door, and these kids that had been down in the foyer earlier on, who were about 15, 16, I really don't know, knocked on the door and came into the room. I wasn't there. Came into the room and sat on the beds and was chatting away, and I walked in And I looked around and I said, oh, what are you doing here? And I, we came up to talk to the band. And I said, you can get out now. I'm not having you in here.
Right.
And the guys were saying, like, why? And I said, because when I said, thank God it was me that walked in. There was nothing going
right.
on at all, nothing, right? They were all just talking about music and what have you. But if you
right.
walked in and you were someone who had that mindset, say, you'd think, what are these underage girls doing in a room full of guys and two large beds? You know? And they couldn't understand. And I said, don't ever, ever, ever let girls in the rooms again. Especially
right.
if you haven't got another, you know, adult or whatever there. And I said to these girls on the way out, what the hell do you think you were doing? Oh, well, we wanted
right.
to see them. I said, where are your parents? Oh, well, they've gone shopping. And I thought, well, you know, that's not on. That's not on. It looked bad, but that was because I was thinking that way, you know. But, I mean, it was quite innocent. But how do I know that 10 years' time they won't be having a traumatic experience from it?
Well, no, I think you were right, because here's the way you're right, and I thank God you're in there. Why would these guys yeah. have a 15, 16, even if it was innocent? First of all, it's not innocent,
yeah.
because any guy
yeah.
would not have a 15 and 16-year-old girl in their room. That's right there, you're
Ooh.
Guilty. Why would you
yeah.
even, what, you want to have an intellectual conversation with a 15 and 16-year-old? Why would you even put her in your – we know. And I have to go on the other side with the girls. Hey, it's a notch on the bedpost, right? I slept with Rod
yeah.
Stewart. I slept with so-and-so at 16. It's a bragging right. And, you
yeah.
know, and America – and we have this hypocrisy saying all kids are so innocent. No, they're not. They're
no,
dangerous
they're not.
Little predators running around. And you got to be careful.
Some of them are very, very worldly. They don't look – as young as they are, you can't tell how old
right.
they are. That is the problem.
Right.
I mean, even, you know, when we've had girls hanging around and that, you look at them and you think, well, I don't know. You know, you're acting older as well. They don't act like I remember 15-year-olds used to act. So
right.
it's very hard. And if a guy's not really thinking, because a lot of them don't think properly, they're not really sort of wired into the fact that maybe she's pretending to be 18, 19, and she's maybe just 17
right.
or 16, and you know, they've got the full makeup on, all the hair and all the, you know, everything.
Sure.
It is difficult. I know that because I've seen it. And, you know, it's
right.
not, I say to them, go back to your mother, you get an earful of
mm-hmm.
abuse, but, you know, but why aren't their mothers and their fathers having more control over them?
I'm even more cynical. I think their parents, usually single mother who still wants to be, hey, hanging on to that, I'm still good looking, and I went to the band, and maybe they. You think, here's how cynical I am, Jane. Cynical, bad me.
Yeah.
I think some of
I
them,
don't
and
know.
I would say two, I would say 2%. I'll go 2% of the people. I'm going to still give the kids a little bit. Oh, my God, I'm in front of the boy band. Yeah, yeah, I'm still going to give that as the innocence. But that 2% that the mother sends in and say, get pregnant. Paycheck.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's how cynical
sure.
I am. You know?
Yeah.
Paycheck.
I mean, I'm sure, you know, there are innocent people out there as well. I mean, not,
sure.
it's not black and white, unfortunately. It's just very, you know,
right.
it is confusing. It is confusing.
It is.
And that's why you have to err on the side of caution.
Right. Now, let's bring you back to your book. We're talking to Jane
yeah.
Risdon. And your book is on Amazon right now? Is on Amazon? And people
it
can
is,
purchase
and
it right
in
now?
Waters, yeah, and you can buy it in Waterstones bookstores, which I don't know if you can get over there. Barnes & Noble,
mm-hmm.
it's on. You know, it's all of those. Yeah.
Really? Undercover Crime Shorts. Jane, you know, you're safe as an author. Not many people are knocking on your door saying, Jane, sleep with me, and I want to marry you because you got a great book. You guys don't get late. Authors don't get late. They don't have – well, they do have groupies, though. You know, I think if you're a good author, they have worse than groupies. They don't really have groupies, but they have stalkers. They have stalkers.
Yeah.
If you're a good author, you're a good writer, you go to a book tour, some guy there that – you know, he rips up on his shirt and he has your name, Jane and me. Would that freak you out, Jane?
Yeah.
I'm a fan, big
yeah,
fan, Jane.
Probably. I did have a female fan, actually, who was a bit sort of intrusive.
Really?
And, I mean, she's no longer with us. She died. But it was quite, quite strange at times. You know, everything that you do, everything you say is just sort of like there, you know.
Really?
Very flattering, but a little bit uneasy. Just a little.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Kind of flattering,
yeah,
though, isn't it, Jane? Kind of flattering.
It is flattering, but you know, and also I think it's kind of sad because, in a way, you know, it's usually people that don't have anything else much in their lives, and they cling. You show them a bit of kindness and interest, and
yeah,
they sort of cling on to you a bit. And I don't mind. It's not, you know, they haven't come stalking my house or anything because I'm not famous. But they,
right,
you know, it's sort of a little unsettling, should we say? And I feel sad because you don't want to lead them on.
Right.
You know, you want to sort of be encouraging. Thank you very much. It's lovely and everything, but you don't want to lead them on either. So it's a very difficult,
right,
balancing act.
You know, I keep thinking, I try to put my shoes on with yours, or put my feet in your shoes, whatever you want to say it. If a girl, and I'll be honest, Jane, if she comes through my line with big breasts and a nice booty, I'm signing body parts. Signing it, worth it. I'm an author.
I've done that.
Yes.
I've done that with bands. I've done that with bands
there
on tour where people have stuck bits of their anatomy out and said, sign here.
Worth it.
That's quite funny. Yeah. Nobody's done that to me, thank God.
Oh, they will. I will. If you come to the colonies, I'll be the first one.
Yeah.
I'll be the guy that's going, security.
Uh-oh.
Nope. Yeah. I'm going to touch it. I'm going to touch it. Jane! I'll be him. Now, Jane, let me tell you something. How dangerous. Now, you know, when I did the talk show and I'm doing the radio and I go, okay, for a while I did not put my picture up there because I'm very controversial. You know, I'm going to upset somebody. Somebody's going to want to kill me. And if they want to kill me, I did a good job. That's how I look at it.
Right.
Now,
right,
how is it? Is it to put your picture on your book? Now, did you have to think about it? Are you opening yourself up to, I don't know if I want to do that because now you're out there, they see your face. Did you have a problem with that?
I was a bit anxious about it to begin with, I must admit, because I thought, well, people might recognize me from music and I don't really want to be put into a category of whatever they think I did in music, you know. But in
right,
the end, you've got to put something there and I can't fake somebody else, so it has to be me. What's
yeah,
me? Yeah.
Wow.
No, it is me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you?
Everybody does it.
Yeah, but it's scary, though, right? I mean, you go to the book, you're there in the bookstore, and you go, hey, that's me. And do you ever sit there and pick up your book and just stand in the bookstore and just wave your book around saying, that's me? You know what I mean? Arrows. And,
my husband does that.
Does he really?
He just picks it up, sticks it right in the front of the shelf. and tells waitresses in cafes, that's my wife, she's an author.
Yeah, that's a good guy. That's a good guy. Jane, believe it or not.
He used to do that with bands.
Well, you know, he's a good guy. You know, believe it or not, we've been talking. Can you believe we've been talking for an hour already?
I know. And I'm doing a transatlantic call.
Oh, my God. I know.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Yeah.
But we're going to end the interview. Your delight.
Thank you.
I could just take you to dinner with you and your husband, and we could talk about you in front of your face. I think I'd be really entertained. The book is called Undercover Crime Shorts. It's now on Amazon, and it's really cheap. Now, don't you hate?
Yes.
Now, Amazon is selling your book on Kindle for $2.20, and the paperback is $8.50. Do you have a problem with that, or did your publisher have a problem with that, or anything like
You know what? You're up against the big guys, aren't you? You could,
yeah,
just like Facebook and everything else, you can bang your head against a brick wall, but they're not listening. They call the shots, you don't. Yeah. So, I mean, you either go with it or you don't do it.
Right. You got to love what you do. It's a journey, isn't it, Jane? It's the journey.
Yeah.
You know.
It is. It's not about the money.
Oh, no. Oh, quit lying. Yeah, your next book. I'm lying. I'll buy it. Not about the money. It's about the art. Love my art.
That's it. That's it.
Now, Jane, you've been in other talk shows. Compare this show to other talk shows. Be honest, Jane. You're a critic. I want a review.
Completely different because when I've done others, they have a set list of questions and you go through it and they ask everybody the same question. With author shows, I mean, they do go deep into your writing and everything else, which is great because I like that. I'm not insulting you, but I just kept thinking about Howard Stern.
When
I was listening to your show, the other day when I was just checking out what to expect, and I said to my husband, I said to my husband, I'm going to be Mary Poppins to your Howard Stern.
I know. Isn't that great?
Yeah. No, I've enjoyed
so
much.
Did you enjoy it? Okay. Hey, I'm a great host, huh?
Yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah, you are. It's fun.
That's top two, huh? Top two?
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent.
Uh-huh.
Most excellent.
Look for Jane's. Look for Jane's book. I'm lying. It's be a bestseller, Jane. I love it. Three copies for me.
I wish. Wish, yeah.
Well, I have to say, and I say this all the time, I work for a company called MVPOnDemand.com, and we do have, if anybody's listening, including you, Jane, listening, we do have a digital marketing program and service to move artists forward, and it's great success with promotion and marketing. Jane, if you're interested, what I'm going to do is after the show, I'm going to put the link into your Facebook. And if you're looking for more promotion and marketing, it's a great package, Jane. If you're interested, please hit the button, and then you would have me for a while. How's that, Jane? Can you imagine having me and your husband? Oh, my God, what a holiday treat. Jane.
That sounds like a migraine to me.
A migraine. I'll take it.
Too much.
I'll take it.
No, that sounds cool.
I'll do that. Thank you so much, Jane. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you 30 seconds, promote your book, tell people how to get it, all about you. It's all yours, Jane. And Jane, if you want here's how it works. If you want the interview, you can go to free download and download it, or we have the edited version, which is condensed. Yeah. If you want that, we have that available too. But Jane, 30 seconds, sell me, sweetheart, sell me.
Tell you. Well, if you want to have a ride which is going to take you up and down at Spaghetti Junction, if you're going to have more thrills and spills than a roller coaster, then get my book, because that you're on the edge of your seat. It's like no stories that you've ever had before. There are something for everyone, something about the FBI, something about serial killers. There's people who have to do things to inherit money from a will. Things that everyday people do and ways to kill people in everyday ways. I mean, it's things you've got in your house you don't know. You could kill someone and get away with. So, shine my book. Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it.
Wow. I love it. And how do they reach you, Jane? Do you have your Facebook, your
they
social
can get
media?
Me. Yeah, I've got janerisden.com, which is my website. Jane Risden Author on Facebook. I'm Amazon. I'm Jane Risden Author. You can get me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, all of those. Just if you just Google Jane Risden Author, up pops a load of crap. So you'll find me.
That's right.
Some of it I've
and don't forget
read,
she's.
So I don't know what's on it.
Well, you sold it well. And I will take that compliment to my heart that I'm a migraine. I mean, that's the best thing anybody ever said to me. Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah, it's a nice
I like
migraine.
A migraine.
Nice migraine.
But it.
You
nice
do.
Migraine.
I do.
But a migraine is good. I stick to your mind, and you think about me, and it's in your head all the time.
In your head. That's right.
Before you leave, Jane, we have another segment coming up.
Yeah.
You like eating. You like eating, Jane. What's your favorite food, Jane? What's your favorite food?
Salad. I'm boring. Salad. It used to be curry.
Salad?
Salad as I've got older. Yeah, I know. I'm boring. Cheese. Lots of cheese.
Really? Well, we have a great author just in the studio. Just 1 minute. She may have a question for you. Her segment is coming up, and she's a celebrity chef. Her name is Chef Charisse Kateri Cox. Amazing dishes. Amazing.
Wow.
I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
Before I met her, there's a true story, Jane. Before I met her, I weighed 220. I am now 245, and I'm heading towards obesity and diabetes. Love the woman.
Oh, my God.
Love her. Here she is right here. Let's say, and she's an author, too. Hello, Cherise.
Wow.
Good morning.
Good
Hello,
morning.
Cherise.
How are you?
Good.
I was
How
loving
you?
Your story. And I have to tell everyone, if you want good underwear or undergarments, go to
yeah.
Marks and Spencer's and order them. I still have pairs from when I was 14. And I'm 47
really?
Now.
Yes. Oh, yeah, Marks and Spencer's are the best.
Yes,
Ladies
they are.
Yeah, they are. They are. You never thought you'd be talking about underwear.
No. As soon as you said Marks and Spencer, I thought about the underwear.
Yeah. But they do good food as well. You know, you could shop there and get all your ingredients because they're top-class ingredients.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't been there since
you know,
I was 14, but, oh, such a nice store.
Wow. It is.
Oh, she... But, she is such a good chef. We try to do a show. We do it, and it's
right.
one of the best rated shows when Chef Cherise is on. And today she's going to be cooking risotto, shrimp risotto.
Risotto. Wow.
Look
that sounds
at
nice.
That.
Yeah.
And she's a cookbook. She's an author. She has some cookbooks. One is called Jamaican Me Hungry. She's Jamaican, part Jamaican. So I love the title Jamaican
oh,
Me
right.
Hungry.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Author to
well,
author.
I love ethnic food. It's just that as I've got older, my digestion doesn't like it as much.
Uh-huh.
The spicy,
well,
I mean,
Jay,
I love curries and things like that, but they don't like me.
Oh, well, you know what? You'll love her risotto. It'll taste like salad.
Oh, right.
It really does. It tastes like a nice
well,
Caesar
I'll,
salad.
Well, I'll check it out on Amazon
okay.
if it's there. And I'll look on your site later because I did see something earlier, actually. So, you know, I will look. Yeah, sounds delicious.
Well, good. That's good. Jane, you've been a delish.
Yeah.
You've been a delish.
I will
visit the UK, and I'm sure that you and your husband will let me stay with you guys for a while.
Yeah.
If I raise enough money to come back to America, it'll be like a year.
Until I get a migraine.
But I... Yeah, there's your migraine again. Yes. Thank you so much, Jane, and have safe travels. And I'm glad you're my Facebook friend. I'll give you that information. Again, we have a great crew with our Disney
okay.
marketing promotion department. And hopefully you'll browse that, and hopefully we'll be working together. If not, I wish you the best. Great book. I will read it. Hey, you should think about being
Thank
an
you.
Audio. What do you think? You should do your own audio.
Well,
you got a nice voice.
You think so? Oh, well, I might
I
then.
I think so.
I might. But thank you,
I think you should.
For having me because I've really enjoyed it. It's been brilliant.
Did you really? Yeah. Well,
yeah.
We have that safe word. I will always be your migraine, Jane. We always have that. We always have that. Okay.
Well,
thank you, Jane.
Bye-bye, Cherise. Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen,
bye.
That's
bye.
Jane Risden.
Bye.
Her book's on Amazon right now. Thank you, Jane. And
bye.
You're listening to this. Bye, kiddo. Tell your husband goodbye. I was giving you applause, but I can't find it. Oh, okay. Somebody messed with my studio. And I got to leave it with it. It's a mark. Here we go. That way, when I do editing, I know when I hear the applause, the interview is over. There you go. Jane. Lovely person. Wasn't Jane a lovely person? Lovely person.
Yes, she is.
Lovely person.
Very lovely.
Yeah, it's like I woke up a little late and I couldn't, you know, it's one of these things like my alarm went off. It's like, oh, my God. And then I had 2 minutes. You know, you just wake up your eyes and it says 2 minutes. And I go, can I get myself mm-hmm. together? And I have coffee and then you got to go right to the interview, you know. And it
mm-hmm.
was, I stumbled a couple of times reading it, but I had to get myself together. So what do you think, Cherise?
She
was a good interview.
She kept it going. Yeah, she definitely kept it going.
Hey, I helped. I helped.
Yeah, you helped. You helped a little bit.
Oh, really? All right, I'm going to woo you in the next segment. Just for that, I wasn't going to woo
you.
There's a lot of requests for My Little Black Bum, and I will it to Charisse. You open up the portal. Little Black Bum on the charts. Holiday favorite. And Charisse's segment is coming up in 5 minutes. Don't forget to join us, everybody. And all you have to do is hit that little marquee or call in the studio if you want to hear the show, if you're not on my Facebook friend. And the number is, keep the number, 319-527-6099. That's the number that will get you in. We're having a fantastic cooking segment. I promoted it on. Did you see my promotion on Twitter, Charisse?
Yes, I did. I shared it.
Thank you. That's what we're going to do. And it's going to be shrimp risotto. We're going to Italiano. And it's going to be a great dish. You know, let me tell you something. You know, Charisse has a lot of books, and some of them are cookbooks. One of my favorites, Jamaican Me Hungry. She honored me with a sauce. Yes, she did. Don't you blame her. Don't judge her. She honored me with a sauce. Hammer steak sauce. And Charisse, I mentioned when we were in podcasts the other day, what was your muse for the sauce? And I wonder, you know, she's such a creative person. She makes her own sauces. She has her sauces. And so she came up and she created the sauce. And I said, okay, what makes the hammer steak sauce? What was your muse to do this? And I'm going to ask her again because we're still live. So I'm going to ask you, Charisse. You're making hammer steak sauce. You created hammer steak. So what was the ingredients and what gave you the muse to put the ingredients in and everything? How did it come about?
I just thought of something that dealt with your personality. Like, you're funny, you're strong, and you're spicy. So I said, you know, I need something that is going to be a fun sauce that you could cross with everything, any kind of meat that you want to. And something that's definitely got a kick to it that's very spicy, but also a very strong flavor. So when I was looking, I was thinking about the ingredients to put in it. I said, you know what? I have to put a little bit of bourbon in it. And I have to put like a fruit just to give it a little, you know, a little tangy flavor or spicy flavor, because that's what fruit does to food.
Right.
And I just, you know, I just kept playing with ingredients and just going through my ingredients list. And I was just like, okay, yes, this is all going to mesh together. It's going to give me all three components that I need.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well, I want to thank you for the compliment. And that's hammer steak sauce. There you go. Strong, spicy, funny, but yet sweet and tangy. Everything you want in your mouth. I mean, every woman thinks about, and men, I want a little strong, tangy, zesty. Real men will put hammer steak sauce on their meat. A1, suck it. Forget it. You know, when you go out to a restaurant, and I want you to order a hammer steak sauce, and if they don't have it, make sure they get it, because that's what you need. I mean, what would be good? I mean, I could see a big rib roast, or I could see a steak. What kind of meat should we put the hammer steak sauce on?
Well, you know, I only eat, like, T-bones and sirloin steaks or, you know, strip steaks or something like that. So I tried it on my T-bone. And it was just so good. It just gave, like, I mean, even the way I seasoned my meat, like, it didn't overpower the steak.
Right.
But you could definitely taste it, and it just, like, melted into the meat.
Right. And that's a good ad. Man, when you get a T-boner, they want to taste it.
Oh, gosh.
They want to taste it. You get a T-boner. I love it. All right. Charisse is coming up in about 30 seconds, so we're going to hang up the phone now so she can call in and we can start the show. I want to thank Jane. You've been wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on the show. That's Jane Risdon, everybody. The name of her book is called Undercover Crime Shorts. Undercover Crime Shorts. get it at Amazon. And a good price at Amazon. She's a lovely woman. And she's on Facebook. Say hello. Tell her Hammer sent you. Sell her some Hammer steak sauce. You can put it on salad. All right, we got 10 seconds. And 10 seconds, we got Melissa coming in at 10 seconds. Melissa!
Good morning! How are you?
Good morning.
How are you? You're coming in at 2 seconds. 1 second. Oh,
I know, right?
Melissa.
Oh.
Melissa likes to make a fashionably late entrance. Hello!
Right. I know. It's me!
It's me! All right, the party started.
Nice interview. Very interesting.
Oh, did you?
Very
was
interesting.
It good? Thank you.
Yeah.
I gave her a migraine. How's that? She called me a migraine.
No, she didn't say that.
Oh, Charisse, I got witnesses. Charisse. But she said I was a nice migraine.
Uh-huh.
But I'm glad you the interview did go well. It's been a long time since I did an interview. It's been a long time.
It was good.
Well,
it was good.
You.
Did you hear
thank
what she said? It was so interesting that the mothers are helping these young girls.
Yeah.
Sure.
The band.
Sure.
That interesting?
I told you this.
Are they living vicariously through their daughters, maybe?
Exactly.
Yes, definitely.
Exactly. And I love what she said about the Epstein interview and about the girl. And I mean, I was trying to tell her, when we get all this hypocrisy, oh, my God, they're kids and blah, blah, blah. And she said it right. You know, she said it right. She knew what the girls knew what they're doing. They know what they're doing. It was very interesting. Well, our segment of Charisse is coming up now. We're running 30 seconds late on her segment, so we're going to have to call in. And you're going to have to call back in, Melissa.
Okay.
If you want to, Melissa makes her appearance at this little place called No World or whatever. She's there.
Yeah.
And if you get to see her, which you never will because she hides, say hello. Say hello.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we'll see you guys in about 1 minute. I have to end this show, and Charisse is coming up.
Okay.
And, yes, we have a lot of requests for Little Black Bum. I am so honored.
Gosh.
Thank you, everybody. Top of the charts, Holiday Tree. Melissa, have you ever heard Little Black Bum?
No, I haven't. Play it for me.
Oh, gosh.
It's a holiday treat. It's a holiday treat, and I will sing it for Charisse, and that's my muse on the next segment. All right, everybody. We'll see you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.